Radio Drone.
All right, it's another episode of Radio Drome, and Mr. Jones is back with us this week. Thank you for having internet this week, Brad.
Yeah, no problem. That's always a bonus.
And we've got Mr. Marquis de Suede himself, Alex Jowski.
What's up? I like that, Marquis de Suede.
Yes, the Marquis de Suede.
The 120 Days of Suede.
Well, hey, if you are into the Marquis de Suede, not Alex, but that whole scene, you can go to adamandeve.com, use the promo code DROME, and get 3 free DVDs, 50% off of a single item, free shipping in the United States, and a free mystery gift, which might be Suede. I don't know.
What happens if you use the promo code Suede?
I don't know. But I'm recommending they use the promo code DROME, because if Suede works, I don't get any cut of that. So, because of The Hobbit coming out, I figure it's about time we tackled fantasy movies and the fantasy genre.
Yeah, might as well be talking about this. I got to go see all 3 hours of it in the theater here in a little bit.
Yeah, that's why I decided on this one for tonight, that it's oddly topical. You know, we've never really discussed fantasy movies before. We've hinted at it in certain ones. When somebody says fantasy movie to you, what do you think of, leaving out obviously sexual fantasy? What's the first film that jumps into your mind when somebody says fantasy film?
I don't know. It depends on who I'm talking to. Because if, say, like my friend Buford says fantasy movie, then I'll tend to think of something more along the lines of Lord of the Rings. Not that I'm a Lord of the Rings guy. I'm not. But I know that that's what he's thinking about when he says that. But then again, if I'm talking to Ed Glazer, I'll start thinking of, you know, like the Ator movies or something like that, because he has kind of the same taste in fantasy flicks that I do.
Generally the sword and sandals things from mostly the 80s, like Sword and the Sorcerer.
Well, Conan's the one that really broke it open for its
time. Yeah.
No, I think even before that, it wasn't as popular, and then after Conan became such a huge hit for Universal, you saw a stream of knockoffs and ripoffs I don't think the fantasy genre had ever seen prior to Conan.
Well, the Hercules films were popular. They made
a billion of them.
The
Hercules movies, there are Hercules movies that are very, very popular. There's a lot of B Hercules movies. There's a lot of Hercules knockoffs. It's like there's a lot of Conan B movies and Conan knockoffs. Conan certainly defined kind of that era of that certain section of fantasy, but that is so not like the first freaking popular fantasy film.
Well, I'll agree with you on that, but Conan did one thing definitely that no other film had done, and that was kind of gave everyone an opportunity to dabble who wouldn't have before. I mean, if you look at Lucio Fulci's filmography,
yeah.
Prior to Conan, would you have ever thought he was going to do a fantasy film at some point?
Honestly, it wouldn't have surprised me, because Fulci really did a little bit of everything. He's most notable for the gore films, but he did gangster movies, he did crime flicks, he's done comedy, he's done a kids movie before. So, yeah, I wouldn't have put that outside the norm for him to do a fantasy movie, because, well, he's done about everything else.
Just because he hadn't done one yet, huh?
Well, not necessarily because he hadn't done one, just in that, like, it wouldn't surprise... You could tell me that Lucio Fulci directed whatever kind of movie from whatever genre, and it would not surprise me, because he has a much bigger filmography than a lot of people kind of know about, because his most popular movies and a lot of his best movies are the gore films, are the horror flicks. He's done all kinds of movies outside of that.
Do you think that Conan, I'm just talking for our lifetime, so for right now, our lifetime, Conan was the high watermark that a lot of these other fantasy films attempted to reach, and I really do love the first Conan movie. I'd be hard-pressed to think of another pure fantasy movie like that actually was as good as Conan was.
As good as a fantasy movie that's like Conan?
Style of swords and dragons and witches, and I mean, I know there's no dragons in Conan, at least the first one. But Conan the Destroyer is a piece of crap on a whole different level.
I like Conan the Destroyer.
I like Conan and the Destroyer for different reasons than I like Conan the Barbarian.
For Wilt Chamberlain protecting a woman's virginity.
Grace Jones, you throw Grace Jones in there. Yeah. Conan the Destroyer is kind of fun. It's kind of funny how in the first 5 minutes he has more lines than in the entire first movie. I love the first one. I think the first one's a great freaking film. Fantasy movie of its kind that I would say is as good as Conan. No, I certainly don't think so. I can think of a lot of other ones that I certainly enjoy a lot because when it comes to fantasy, I like the darker stuff. I like the more violent stuff. I like the stuff that's a little edgier, but I really do like the really, really B-grade kind of flick. So I like the Ator movies. I like the Ator movies a lot. I think they're a lot of fun. There's no way I am going to say they're as good as Conan. In terms of enjoyment, I find those movies very entertaining. Some of the ones that Bruno Mattei did, I enjoyed. But I like the B-movie stuff like that. Lord of the Rings, I just find boring.
Lord of the Rings, I mean, I know it's a Kevin Smith trope, but he's not wrong. It's 9 hours of people walking.
It's not entertaining to me, and I don't want to. I used to think it was like when those movies were really big when they first came out. I used to think like maybe it's just because I'm not into fantasy, but then I was like, well, that's not really true. There's a lot of fantasy movies I like a lot. Going back, I love Excalibur. I loved Willow. Lord of the Rings just bored me. It's too long. It's long, and I hate to be that guy. I hate to be that guy.
You hate to be me.
No. I'm complaining about something that's true.
Touche.
But when a movie's not, if the movie was working for me, I wouldn't care that it was that long because I'm not going to immediately dismiss something that's 3 hours long or just because it's 3 hours long. I'm not going to do that. There's plenty of long movies that I like. Those movies bored me to tears. I'm sorry. I certainly get why people are into it. I get that that people like it. I totally understand why it's somebody's thing. It's not my thing. It's not. I just find it dull. I don't find it entertaining in the least bit.
It took me 2 weeks to make it through the extended versions because every time I'd pop a disc in, I'd be out.
Yeah, and I'm just going from the theatrical versions. I have no interest in seeing that. I think tonight at the movie theater, they were showing back-to-back all three extended versions in the theater. You couldn't pay me to do that. And again, I'm not saying that they're bad movies. I don't think they're bad movies at all. Those movies aren't for me. They're not. They're just not that interesting to me. I don't think they're bad. It's just not... It's not for me.
What do you think about the Rankin Bass and Ralph Bakshi animated versions from the 70s and, well, Return of the King was early 80s?
I do think it's kind of funny that all these years later, we still haven't gotten a live-action version of The Hobbit.
That's true. There's so many animated scenes. It's like a cartoon that happens to have a few live-action actors in it.
It's CGI splooge all over the freaking screen. My God.
I personally love the 1977 Rankin Bass Hobbit. To me, those movies,
like, I mean, you can certainly argue about which one's more accurate. I mean, I don't know. I haven't read the book, so I don't know. I'm just going off of the movies, but I thought that the animated movies, the older ones, had a lot more charm to them.
And the voice work. I mean, first of all, John Huston as Gandalf inspired voice casting right there, as well as Brother Theodore as Gollum.
Yeah.
To me, when I hear Gollum, I hear even in the live-action Peter Jackson movies, I think Brother Theodore would have actually been more perfect.
Yeah, and I think the acting is fine in the Peter Jackson ones. I do. I tend to get, especially like with The Hobbit coming out, I tend to get so. And it isn't that it makes me think that the movie's going to be bad, but I tend to get turned off when they're advertising more so the technology of the movie than the movie itself. Like, oh man, this is like with its high frame rate and it's like state of the art 3D and everything and blah blah blah. All this tech talk. Like, I don't care. Just make a good movie. My God. Like, and I'm not saying that that makes the movie bad. I'm just saying, like, that is so not the most important thing in the freaking world to me. Just a good script, a good solid direction. Just make a good movie. I don't give a flying crap about your frame rate. From what I understand, that's not exactly, like, people are kind of torn about that high frame rate thing.
A lot of negativity about it, I've read.
So some of the early reviews say it looks so realistic that it stops feeling like a movie. And they just want, you know, we don't want to watch what looks like a newscast. We want to go see a goddamn movie.
Yeah. I want it to look like a movie. I'm there to see a movie. I want it to look like a movie. And I've heard people who have said what you've just said, that, like, it looks like you're just looking through a window at, like, sort of real life, or like said, like a newscast or something like that, like you're watching a soap opera. And people have used that as, like, to say that that's good. And other people have said that, which I would probably fall in line with this side of it, because I've seen stuff like that before, and I don't care much for it, that's a bad thing. Like, it takes them a while to get used to it. They say, like, going to see the movie, they're like, it's a fine movie, it's a decent flick, it's well made and everything, but it took me like a half an hour to get used to it, is what people say. And I'm like, that's not a good thing. If you go into a 3-hour movie and it takes you a half an hour to get used to how it was shot.
Agreed.
That's probably why it's 3 hours.
Yeah, the first hour is the acclimation period.
That's another thing I'm hearing about this movie, too, is that it doesn't need to be 3 hours.
Well, and this is only the first part, so it's not even the whole story.
This is one of those times where, like, you know, it's a long movie, and I got to go see it at midnight. So, yeah, I'm not really looking forward to it. Again, it's not that I think, like, oh my god, this looks like a piece of the crap. It's just more like, well, the other movies aren't really, I didn't really get into the other movies, so why would I really be looking forward to this? But even with that being said, I still hope it turns out good, because I'm gonna be there for 3 hours. You know, I want it to be good. Because if I'm going to be there, I'd rather be there for 3 hours watching something that's entertaining me than be there for 3 hours bored out of my mind.
You'd rather watch something interesting than The English Patient.
Yeah, I would. I would rather watch something.
I actually think The English Patient was probably the most boring film I've ever sat through in my entire life.
Who? See, I don't know if I'd say that about The English Patient, because I watched that in parts. Most boring movie? God, I don't know. I mean, throw a Gus Van Sant movie out there. Jerry. So at least Jerry is under 2 hours, but it didn't freaking feel like it. It's two guys walking.
Well, what do you guys think about one of the most popular 80s fantasy movies? And now this one, you can't deny the influence it had, even if it was just how many times it got watched, The Beastmaster.
I love The Beastmaster.
I love the first film. I adore it, but Dennis Miller was not wrong when he said there was a time in the 80s when HBO stood for, hey, Beastmaster's on.
Yeah. There was a time in the early 90s when Showtime stood for, hey, Beastmaster 2 is on.
or TBS. I know TBS showed the hell out of that, too.
I actually, this is sad. Because of how many times they freaking showed Beastmaster 2, I might have seen that one more than the first one, even though the first one's way freaking better. Like, the first one, and I really agree with Spoonie on this. He brought this up when we were talking about Beastmaster 2. Thinking back on it, I was like, yo, what crap? Yeah, I might be the same way on this. Like, because we both saw that around the same time when it came out on video, and he said, I think that was the first movie that I probably enjoyed knowing how, because it was so bad, like, I hate to use the term ironically, because that implies that I was, like, hating myself for watching it, but no. But he said, like, that was the first one that he can remember, like, really kind of watching, like, and enjoying it, like, as a bad film. I was thinking back on that, too. I was like, yeah, because he and I are about the same age. I was like, yeah, I can see that, because before then, when I would watch something that was really, really bad, I was young, you know, so I probably thought it was really good.
But no, Beastmaster 2
Not Beastmaster 2. I didn't think, I never thought that was good.
When I watched the first Beastmaster when I was a kid, I was like, hey, it's a He-Man movie that's better than the real He-Man movie.
It is.
That's true.
It is better than that.
It's true. To me, I love Beastmaster, Beastmaster 2 is a piece of crap, but it's got a charm to it that you cannot deny.
Yeah, it's got Wings Hauser in it.
And Wings is having fun. You can see he's enjoying the hell out of this movie, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Sarah Douglas, she looks a little put upon. She doesn't look like she really wants to be there in some scenes.
Yeah, I can see that. Clothing store guy looked like he was having fun.
Too much fun.
And what can we do to you?
Let's pull out every gay stereotype we can in only 3 minutes.
Yeah.
But then the third film.
I haven't seen that one.
It got back to the roots of it being in an all fantasy world. It was basically, now I first saw it on the local Fox station on like Night at the Movies. Was that actually a Fox TV movie or was that a real film?
See, I never saw the third one.
I know that it was a TV movie because I was looked it up once and it said TV movie next to it.
Okay, that was actually a Fox original. And
yeah,
you could tell they did not have the budget to do what they needed to do.
I do remember it being advertised. I never watched it. It's like, what? It's not in L.A. anymore? Screw that. I'm not watching this. I do remember it being advertised. I can't remember what network. Yeah, I guess Fox. Yeah, that definitely wasn't a theatrical film.
Well, I thought it might have been direct-to-video.
Oh,
I don't know if it was made for TV or made direct-to-video, but I saw it for the first time on Fox. But
I didn't see the TV show either.
The TV show, if you can get over Dar not being Mark Singer and the fact that they clearly don't have the budget to do what they wanted to do, it wasn't that bad. Honestly, the Conan TV show was better, but again, they did not have the budget to do what they needed to do. Although, if you got to replace Arnold, Ralph Mueller was not a bad replacement.
Conan was the first movie I watched in my 30s. Last year when I turned 30, it was midnight. I was still awake. It's like, crap, it's midnight. Well, I guess I'm 30 now. So I had Netflix hooked up to the TV and everything, and I'm flipping through there. I'm like, okay, what's going to be? I wasn't tired. Like, it was one of those deals, like, I got to put on something because I know I'm going to be awake for a few more hours. So I'm flipping through. I'm like, okay, what's going to be the first movie I watch in my 30s? Like, flipping through, like, no. My stepmother's an alien. God, no. It's flipping through them like Conan the Barbarian. Yeah, all right. Okay, cool. All right. That works.
John Milius and Oliver Stone.
Yeah, yeah. Two people I love.
But then you've got this weird thing where depending on when you were born, our generation to the current generation, when you say fantasy, we think of dragons and swords and witches. Yeah. The current generation thinks of brooms and wands and Harry Potter.
God.
So the term fantasy has changed with the generations.
Well, I think that they also, I don't think that they primarily just think of Harry Potter because there's still also the Lord of the Rings movies. There's still also those. Those are still relevant. I mean, obviously with The Hobbit coming out. So I don't think they primarily just think about the Harry Potter movies. I think that what we were just talking about, because of Lord of the Rings, that still is kind of in their heads a little bit. Granted, it's not my favorite example of the genre. there's so much better to me anyway than that. But, you know, there is still some other things other than just Harry Potter.
Well, then what about this thing that George Lucas has been saying this since the 70s, that Star Wars is not a science fiction film, it's a fantasy movie.
It has all the tropes of a fantasy film.
It does.
It just happens to be in space.
It does, but I don't know. It doesn't fit what maybe my definition is too narrow. It doesn't fit my definition of a fantasy film. It, to me, feels more like a science fiction film that has fantasy tropes to it.
You've got this evil kingdom, and you've got the young hero rescuing the princess from the castle. In this
case,
magic. A Death Star.
Magic.
You've got magic. You've got your
animal companion. I don't
think there's any...
Yeah. I don't think there's anything wrong with it being both. I always think of it being more science fiction because, I mean, sci-fi would come in my head more than fantasy would, or before the term fantasy would anyway. But it's I think it's both. I don't think there's anything wrong with it being both. The term sci-fi fantasy comes up all the time. That's not an uncommon thing. And I think that series fits it perfectly. It has elements of both genres.
No,
the lightsabers, swords. How many other sci-fi movies do you see with swords?
Star Crash.
Ice pirates.
Okay.
They actually used swords in Ice Pirates, real swords.
Star Odyssey.
But then you've also got this thing. Now, I don't know if these are available online, but I've got some old magazines, like science fiction writer industry insider magazines from 1977 when Star Wars first came out. And it's funny to read the reviews, which are all universally negative. And like I said, this is within screenwriters and novelists. At least four different reviews pointed out the fact that Star Wars is a ripoff of Lord of the Rings. It's got the same plot tropes. It's got Obi-Wan as Gandalf, and it's got the gathering of the group to go to Mordor, which would be the Death Star. And they pointed out all these similarities that George Lucas made a sci-fi version of Lord of the Rings.
Whatever. Everything has similarities to everything.
What do you guys think of modern fantasy films? And I'm talking in the Conan type genre, the Lord of the Rings type genre, versus the older ones, like even when they didn't have the budget to do it, like the A'Tor films, you know, or the Quest for the Mighty Sword. Which of the A'Tor
films? That is an A'Tor film.
But I know there's one of them. Was it Iron Sword or that one that's not a real A'Tor film, even though it's an A'Tor film?
That's Iron Sword. And I actually think Iron Sword is probably the best one. Wait, is it Iron Sword or Iron Warrior?
I think it's Iron Warrior, actually. D'Amato insists that movie never happened. In fact, when he came out with his one, he's like, this is A'Tor 3.
Oh, yeah, because he never had any other franchise before. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, but he's also the one that released that movie as Troll 3 in some markets.
That's like if Bruno Mattei complaining that something was a ripoff of his Terminator 2. What the hell? Like, Iron Warrior, though, I thought was the best out of the four A'Tor movies. It was actually kind of good. It was really well made. It was really moody and kind of Zardoz-like in a lot of places. It still had Miles O'Keefe in it playing A'Tor. It's really moody. It's different. It's different than the other. Like, it has similarities to some of the other two. I mean, obviously, of course, since it's Miles O'Keefe playing the same character, but it's certainly more like the if the other A'Tor movies are like Conan the Destroyer, then Iron Warrior is more like Conan the Barbarian in terms of its mood and style.
It's tone, yeah.
I've only seen the D'Amato ones.
Yeah, it's bad, and I like the first two D'Amato ones. Iron Warrior, like I just said, I thought was the best one. Quest for the Mighty Sword.
Yeah, that's
boring as hell, honestly.
I don't know if I thought it was boring, but it wasn't very good. I like the troll, Grendel. I liked Grendel.
Well, and then you've also got this weird thing where, since we're expanding the term fantasy to like Star Wars, you've got a lot of people that call a lot of the post-nuke movies, especially a lot of the Italian ones, like Steel Dawn with Patrick Swayze. Highlander is the first Highlander film is constantly called a fantasy movie. I'd call it more science fiction, but I can see where people are getting a fantasy sort of setting out of that.
I don't think that something like it's kind of like what we were saying about Star Wars. I think that certain movies don't have to be one or the other. You know, that's a sci-fi fantasy is a common term because a lot of movies just have similarities to both genres.
Yeah, well, sci-fi fantasy is the same section at the bookstore. They don't have a sci-fi section and a fantasy. They just group them in one.
Uh-huh. Most video stores are the same way, too. But then you've also got this thing that my son, when I say fantasy movies, he immediately thinks of Harry Potter. I really do think the generations have changed with that because I believe that, like, showing my son Conan after he's seen Harry Potter, I don't think he's going to appreciate Conan as much because to him, fantasy is a much lighter genre than something like Conan, which is all about boobs and cutting people into pieces.
Those are two radically different movies. I mean, I mean that's like, I don't know. I mean, you could still show someone Conan and they could still get some enjoyment out of it, I think. Maybe not with everyone, but I think with a lot of people, they still would. While you could call both movies fantasy, they are radically different. I mean, that's like saying that, like, you know, someone who goes to see, like, kind of family-friendly action movie might not appreciate Die Hard. Yeah, I think that you can. Fantasy's like any other genre, you know. You can just do a lot with it, and you have lighter stuff like Harry Potter, and then you have much, much rougher stuff, which is more so the fantasy that I enjoy.
Well, lighter than Harry Potter is the fantasy I've been exposed to a lot lately of the Disney princesses.
Yeah,
yeah, but you've also got a 6-year-old daughter, so...
Yeah.
Well, me too, man. I've been watching a lot of those too, but not because I have a kid, it's because I got Lloyd.
Lloyd likes Disney princesses.
He does.
One of the things I've always hated about fantasy movies, it's always been my gripe because you know I've got to have one. Even ones I like, this is the difference to me between fantasy and science fiction. A science fiction movie will make up a bullshit reason why something happens. Oh, see, the nanites do this and they alter you on a cellular level. A fantasy movie says, it's magic, that's why it happened.
Hey, that's not a problem. That just makes it easy to write.
Makes it very easy. And plus, I don't know if any... I think they go into it a little more than that.
In a lot of cases, it's just, the wizard does something. Why'd that happen? It's magic. Okay.
Yeah, it's just sure. Get on with the story. No need for this exposition to explain. Right. Magic. Magic. Let's move.
Yeah, I mean, they'll pick a flimsy way to explain it like they do in the sci-fi movies.
I was always more of a fan of the sci-fi ones because... I at least like the fact that they tried to pretend to put thought into why such is happening.
So you like the whole midichlorians thing?
Not midichlorians. Why do you have to go there? You're a son of a bitch.
Hey, you're the one who brought up this topic.
Well, I know, but midichlorians suck.
Oh, come on. It did what you said that you like. It explains stuff, you know, with its midichlorians.
Yeah, the Force isn't magic anymore.
See? It's no longer just magic. Like you said, it has an explanation. So you should be happy about the midichlorians. Now, me personally, I think the midichlorians thing is stupid, but it sounds like you should really like it.
Touche. Touche. And then you have this other thing in fantasy, preconception in popular culture. For instance, if you're just watching a movie and let's say you take the same basic story of Star Wars versus the same story told in an actual fantasy setting. For whatever reason, the science fiction version is taken with more credibility than the fantasy one. Otherwise, people kind of go, well, it's dragons and wizards and fairies, big deal. Oh, this is evil demons and scientists. It seems to have weird credibility differences, even if you're telling the same basic story.
One genre has the word science in the title, which gives it a lot of credibility. The fantasy genre immediately brings to mind D&D nerds.
Yeah, well, Scientologists have the word science in the title, too. That doesn't mean they're remotely credible.
They would like to think they are.
I'll take them over the Christian scientists.
They demean the word science. But look, there is that credibility thing, and there is like the Dungeons & Dragons trope. Everybody trots out, this is like a Dungeons & Dragons style movie. Mm-hmm. Is that a bad thing to be compared to? That Dungeons & Dragons was so entrenched in our culture, almost every fantasy movie that came out in the 80s was at some point compared to, it's like a Dungeons & Dragons campaign. Didn't matter if they were an A-Tor film, a Beastmaster, a Conan, or anything in between. Is that good or bad?
It could get redundant, and I don't know. I would say it would be more so bad... It all depends on really who you're talking to, honestly. Like, you know, if you compare something to D&D and you say it's very D&D-like and you're talking to somebody who's really, really into that, then that could get them to check this movie out. They might like it. If they're really big into D&D, they've probably already seen it. But, you know, the unfortunate side to that is that can also turn some people off. If
it's
like,
the D&D movie.
Yeah, because but even before then, if someone's just not into D&D, which I'm not, I'm not a D&D guy. If someone's just not into D&D, you know, comparing something that, you know, who knows, they might like to D&D, they might not really be as keen to check it out because it's that comparison has been made, which I think that could be the downside to that.
And the Dungeons & Dragons movie, it's ironic that there are all these good fantasy films that were compared to Dungeons & Dragons, and then the actual Dungeons & Dragons movie was a steaming piece of shit.
Well,
Jeremy Irons in it, though. He puts in the best.
I love Bruce Payne in it.
Oh, I actually think he and Jeremy Irons were in a competition to see who could overact more.
I know, and it was awesome. It's like what Alex said earlier about fake He-Man movie being better than real He-Man movie.
Yeah, because, yeah, Masters of the Universe, which that's another one that it's a relatively fantasy setting with some sci-fi tropes in the cartoon, and then the almost straight sci-fi for the movie. It was like they canon completely misunderstood what He-Man was about, which we're going to do a whole episode on canon at some point, and that should not surprise anybody.
I watched the He-Man movie back
I thought you were about to say, all right, we're going to do a whole episode on He-Man at some point.
So no. No, canon. Canon, and I know you're going to be into that one, Brad. We're going to do a whole canon episode.
But I was supposed to get a canon jacket at one point from Rotten Cotton, but they never sent me one.
Like a crew jacket?
Yeah, they were they started selling canon jackets, and the guy who runs it, I reviewed his movie on the site. He did Black Devil Doll, not the original, the newer one that came out. Yeah, Chester Neville Turner. I think he died years ago, but the guy who runs Rotten Cotton, he afterwards said like, yeah, I'll send you a jacket. I never did get my canon jacket.
Bastard.
I got the novelization of Black Devil Doll. That was pretty funny. Actually, is. That was so weird to say that about Black Devil Doll, but like, I did enjoy the book better than the movie.
That really does say something.
Like, it was really funny. Like,
I think that's a statement, Brad.
Yeah, it was like, it was really funny reading that in novel form.
Was it even close?
The book is better than the movie.
It was. The movie was a dead-on adaptation.
Sticking with fantasy, do you think fantasy? I'm talking about prior to 1995, not because of the arbitrary cutoff date you give me, because that's when CGI became affordable enough. Do you think fantasy movies worked better in animation, straight animation, than they did in live action, just by benefit of the fact that in animation, having a scene where two characters are walking and talking is going to cost the same amount of animation as five dragons fighting over a city being destroyed, something you cannot do for the same amount of money in live action?
I liked live action better because a real dragon was more spectacular than cartoon dragon.
Yeah,
as in because they really existed, right, to you, Alex?
Well, it was real prop. It wasn't just
real dude. back when the dragons in the movies would be real props. Yeah, I'm with him on that. I enjoyed that better than, and I just tended to like the live action ones better than the animated ones anyway.
Perfect example of what you were saying, Dragon Slayer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that movie is amazing.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
The effects hold up today. CGI could not have made better effects. That was 81, 82.
Yeah, and like with Lord of the Rings and everything, like it's like I'm sorry, I would be much more impressed if a lot of these things like Gollum and such were just like dude in makeup. I would be much more impressed with that. Andy Serkis is phenomenally talented, but I'm sorry, I'd be much more impressed if like he was under a lot of makeup, like they would have done it back in the day. I would have liked that a lot better, because as it is, I mean, yeah, he's there and he's doing all those moves, but it's like the motion capture all over him, and it doesn't look any different to me anyway. I mean, maybe an expert on it can tell the difference, but to me, it doesn't look any different than like if they're motion capturing him, or if it's just a tennis ball on string and they're just animating the whole thing.
Well, like the reason I brought that up, even though it goes back into science fiction, is like Star Trek the Animated Series. Mm-hmm. The reason that had more space battles and bigger aliens and things like that, they said it costs just as much to animate the crew having dinner and a discussion about aliens than it does to have a Romulan warbird attacking the Enterprise. So we were able to do more in the animated setting than we ever could have hoped to have done in the live-action TV series.
Yeah, it makes sense.
One of the reasons I don't like parts of Ralph Bakshi's Lord of the Rings, the live action stuff did not work at all for me.
Mm-hmm.
It completely took me out of the film with how bad the Balrog, for example, looked in that. The animated sequences, they worked just fine.
Yeah. It's been a long time since I've seen that. It's been a really long time since I've seen Bakshi's Lord of the Rings.
And then, you know,
I don't even remember there being live action sequences. It's been that long for me. I just remember where there's a whip, there's a way.
I remember
I thought that's
now,
from Hobbit,
now that he, I remember now that he mentioned that, I was like, oh yeah, there was live action in that.
And it just, to me, it didn't work. It didn't work. But then you've also got what I think is one of the best, mostly animated, one of the best fantasy movies ever is Ralph Bakshi's Wizards. That movie's phenomenal.
Now I'll have to take your word on that. I never saw Wizards.
I saw Fire and Ice.
Yeah, I've seen Fire and Ice.
Fire and Ice was all right. Wizards is, I can't even describe it. Mark Hamill has one of the funniest scenes in that, and it's an intentionally funny scene. And what happened to Wizards is just kind of a shame in 1977. It came out 1 week before this little film called Star Wars, also by 20th Century Fox. So by the second week, they were actually pulling Wizards out of theaters to get more screenings of Star Wars in.
Oh, bummer.
So that's it was murdered by Star Wars, and they were both by 20th Century Fox.
That's
so
just
Fox
bad
pulling
luck.
Their own product.
That's just bad luck. What about Coonskin? That's Ralph Bakshi. Is that fantasy?
Well, it's not realistic, so maybe. or Fritz the Cat.
That's a great movie.
I like it, and I hate it at the same time.
Okay, what reason do you have for hating it?
The fact that it's not as good as it was made. Maybe it's the fact that it was blown up to me to being this amazing hard sex, hard drugs, pigs as cops and all this. And when I saw it, it just did not live up to what my contemporaries had built it up in my head to.
You were expecting Mouse, weren't you?
You were expecting porn?
No, I was just expecting more of a subversive kind of fuck you to the authority. And what I got was just Tom and Jerry on crack.
No, I thought it really was that, what you said. I thought it was a very, very satirical flick. I thought the movie had a lot to say. I thought it really was kind of that sort of you kind of movie you were talking about.
See, that's to me, one heavy of the, that's one of the, that.
That's one of the things that actually impressed me about it, because I think when I was a kid and I went into when I went into Fritz the Cat, I think I was just kind of sort of expecting a raunch fest, you know, like just like, oh, it's going to be like Porgies, but it's animated. And then what I got was something that actually, you know, was trying to say something and being kind of clever about it. And I totally got that out of Fritz the Cat.
Well, okay, let me ask you about – now, I love this movie, okay? I'm not so sure I agree with Terry Gilliam about it, but I love this film. The Fisher King, he calls it an urban fantasy. I can see where he's kind of coming from, but to me, if you had to categorize Fisher King, it's more of a drama.
But I see what he's saying.
Yeah, I see what he's saying, too. I'll agree with you on that. It is more of a drama, but I can see where he would describe it as fantasy.
Yeah, I completely understand what he's saying.
And I think that film is absolutely amazing. That's one of the most underrated films of the 90s, I think, is Fisher King.
Fisher King is awesome.
Because it bombed at the box office, it didn't do well on video, and it just kind of remained unseen. And even today, when I tell people that Terry Gilliam directed this, that's a Terry Gilliam movie? Yeah, and it's a damn good one.
Yeah,
that actually has a lot of Terry Gilliam's look to it, too.
Yeah, it totally does. And that was I saw that when it first hit video. I didn't see it in the theater, but when it was a new release, my mom rented it. We watched it. I thought it was really damn good. It was. It's one of those that I didn't really realize until later. Kind of didn't do all that well upon release.
Well, I think part of the reason is people were expecting out of, because it was billed as a Robin Williams film. They were expecting a wacky comedy, and while there is comedy in it, that's not – honestly, most of the comedy comes from Jeff Bridges.
Yeah.
You know, most of the comedy's not from Robin Williams, who has a pretty dramatic, if not kind of schizophrenic role in that.
Yeah, he's got a lot of the darker stuff in the movie when the guy goes on the shooting spree and kills his wife.
Yeah, that gave me nightmares as a kid. His Robin Williams flashbacks with the shooting spree.
Yeah, her brains all over his face and in his dinner.
Yeah,
that was rough.
Well, and
that
then
gave me a couple sleepless nights when I was like 10.
Well, and then what about this film? And this definitely does have fantasy elements. I definitely call this a fantasy film because the comic was as well as being science fiction. Heavy Metal is billed as the ultimate teenage fantasy, but it's not a fantasy in the same way that we're talking. But I can see that movie as, yes, that was the ultimate teenage fantasy in 1981, wasn't it?
I don't
to go
know.
To the boob world there.
I never beat off to cartoons.
I told you, fantasy, not in a sexual setting.
Oh,
No,
I thought you meant sexual setting because you said not the way we've been talking about.
Well, because it's not fantasy in the traditional way. This is not fantasy with dragons and stuff. This is fantasy in the way of, you know, a teenager gets abducted from Earth and becomes this huge muscle-bound guy that ends up saving the entire planet. You can't tell me at 13 that that's not a non-sexual fantasy you had, you know? Stories in that are very fanciful.
Yeah, they are.
Well, I didn't see heavy metal until I was 19. I'd outgrown that stage of my life of that fanciful character projection that, this could be me kind of thing.
So you never wanted to go to Boob World?
I certainly see what you're saying. I don't know if it had that impact on me. I mean, because I don't know. I was watching Shanda Tweed movies at the time. I mean, I didn't really need cartoon boobs.
Well, see, I saw heavy metal when I was 11. I saw it when it first hit Cinemax. Brad, I'm sure you remember that infamous Cinemax run it had because of the licensing issues. They couldn't release it on video, so they just showed it on Cinemax every 2 weeks.
Cinemax is when I saw it for the first time.
Yeah, me too. And then there was all those bootlegs of it going around on the tape trading circuit, and every kid I knew had a copy off of Cinemax.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I didn't see it until long after video, and I remember them advertising it on, like, oh, you can't get this at stores, you gotta call our 800 number and order it.
The 1996, the first official release of the movie, then.
They also sold Akira that way, too.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember him selling Akira that way.
Well, that's because Carl Masek, the guy that invented, or brought Robotech to America, was the one who, for whatever reason, Streamline Pictures that he ran at the time, they had the rights to Akira for a theatrical exhibition, and they said you can put it out on videotape, but you cannot sell it to video stores. It was specifically written in the contract, video stores. So he said, well, then we'll just advertise people with direct ordering and we'll sell it directly to comic book stores. It was a genius way to get around the stupid legal wording of not selling it to a video store.
Yeah.
That was genius. But yeah, Akira, people call Akira fantasy as well. And in a way, I do see where they're coming from there. Although I see more of the science fiction overtones with that, though.
I've always seen that more as science fiction.
Yeah, like I wouldn't consider Star Trek fantasy because it's all about the science. Star Wars, on the other hand, isn't really about the science. You don't never get an explanation of how the Millennium Falcon works. It just goes. It's magic.
That's true. Why did it work? It's magic. Leave it alone.
Yeah, it works. You know, it's having some trouble in Empire, but you know, eventually they fix it up. It's fine.
And they don't explain what the trouble is. They're like, this thing I made up and pulled out of my ass isn't working, so I'm gonna get in this room with the tubes and.
If I move these two, well, no, that's Star Trek Next Generation making up their science. That was fantasy. All right, if we use the tachyon particles and we put them in the warp core and we go at -5 megatrons and then we'll do this and it'll create a warp barrier around the ship. Oh, shut up. Just say it's magic.
See, that's the difference.
Just say
it's
magic.
Science. That's all science. Star Wars just like magic. Let's go.
Well, and then you do have people that because of the word fantasy being so expansive, you do have people that say like the X-Men movies or even Superman. Those are fantasy films. Again, I can see where they're coming from, and I also can't. Does that make sense?
I can, you know, if you have a very, very, very broad definition of the word fantasy.
I can for Superman, but not like other comic book heroes. Like Batman, I could never see as fantasy.
Again, it's like I said, like I don't know. I mean, like, if you have a very broad definition of that could stretch out to, like, movies where your lead characters are mutants and have powers and whatnot, then sure, I can see why you would say that. I can't say I've given it much thought in terms of the X-Men movies. I've just considered them comic book action movies.
But then you also have the negative side of anything that deals with time travel or whatnot is considered fantasy. I have seen Martin Lawrence's Black Knight called a fantasy movie.
It does have knights in it and swords.
And time travel, but I'm kind of going, it's not really that to me is more of a straight-up comedy, or at least an attempt at comedy with Martin Lawrence.
I don't know, like, can a fantasy not also be a comedy?
No, it can, but I think that one's more interested in being a comedy than it is a fantasy.
Yeah, by far. Yeah.
So to me, the priority seems to be a comedy that has fantasy tropes to it.
Yeah, you're not gonna stick that movie in the fantasy section at the video store.
Right, but I've heard some people call it a fantasy movie, and I'm like, well, you're not wrong. You're not really right either.
Yeah, I mean, it's got its gears in mainly being a comedy. I mean, that's like, I don't know, like also putting like a kid in King Arthur's court in your fantasy section.
Or, well, then you also have like any medieval period piece that ends up being considered fantasy.
Well, yeah, look at what the Sci-Fi Channel did with Braveheart. When the first Lord of the Rings movie was first coming out on video, the Sci-Fi Channel showed Braveheart. They advertised it as, if you like Lord of the Rings, you'll like this. And I'm kind of going, yeah, these two films, not even close to one another.
Yeah, no. Like once it crosses into, like, once it goes into, like, magic and, like, witches and stuff like that, then, okay, yeah, but something... No. Something that's just purely medieval, like Braveheart. No, that's not fantasy.
You throw
some witches in there and some spells and like dragons. Yeah, then it's fantasy.
Yeah, Lady Hawk though has magic in it.
Yeah, Lady Hawk. Yeah, exactly.
And I like Lady Hawk.
Me too.
Excalibur's got all that kind of stuff.
It's got the Lady of the Lake and Morgana and stuff. So
yeah.
But Spartacus, no.
No.
Gladiator.
Ten Commandments would be fantasy.
Technically.
There's magic.
Yeah, there's magic and there's godlike characters, literally. Literally.
And there's swords and sandals and...
What would you say is the defining, not necessarily your favorite, but the defining movie for you that is fantasy?
For me, though, it would be Sword and the Sorcerer. It has all the tropes that I like. It has the actual dragons and stuff.
Boobs,
yeah, they're just a...
And it also had a three-bladed sword.
Yes. And that one, you know, I watched that one when it came out, and it sat in my mind all the time. That how does this compare to Sword and the Sorcerer?
Merlin's Shop of Mystical Wonders.
Mystery Science version or uncut?
Oh, uncut. Oh, totally. No.
Those guys
honestly,
over the movie just suck.
I know, right? I'm trying to watch this. Probably Excalibur. It really speaks towards my taste and what I like about that particular genre. It's dark. It's violent. It's morbid as hell. It's all foggy and steamy and
really
well dirty.
Shot.
Really well shot and just grimy, and like I like it. I like it a lot.
I gotta say mine would be the original Conan, John Milius and Oliver Stone's Conan. That I watched that movie probably 100 times as a kid. I read the comics, I read the novels. I always loved that movie. That to me is the defining fantasy film.
And if you don't like it, then to hell with you.
So Brad Jones, if people want to find you and if they want to have a fantasy about Brad Jones, where would they go?
Well, then you go to thecinemasnob.com.
What about Marquis de Suede, Alex? And I'm going to try and make sure that sticks. Marquis de Suede.
I like it. Geekjuicemedia.com.
And you can find me at 1201beyond.com, 1201beyond@gmail.com. Have a good night, guys.